Matt Tamua, tell me, who made their international debut first? Was it James Slipper or Sakopi Kepu?
It's got to be Caps, surely. I think he's a bit older. No, he is older. I played with James in Schoolboys, so I'm sure Caps was finished at Wesley College by then.
You're not wrong. 2008, Sakopi Kepu made his debut. He's going to join us on the Rural Rugby podcast in a little while, but pretty cool to kind of think that Sakopi Kepu at 38 still playing, and James Slipper just became Australia's most Super Rugby capped player, bringing up his 178th match for the Brumbies on the weekend in their win over the Waratahs. Give us a James Slipper story, Matt.
Slips, I actually messaged him yesterday and I said, mate, did you realise you've been a professional rugby player for longer than you haven't in your life? He's been a professional rugby player, I think, for about 18 years, and for about 17 years of his life, he wasn't. So it's pretty remarkable when you think of it that way, that it goes to show how long. He's a great guy. He's got to be one of the most liked guys in every team. He's very grumpy. He's always complaining, but he's a soldier. He gets up. When he's one of those guys, you know, when he speaks, you listen, because he doesn't speak too much. He's a great man, great man.
He is a soldier. We'll talk a bit more about Slips in a little while, but lots coming up on the Raw Rugby podcast. Kirtley Beale's back. He's found a home at Western Force. Good luck to him. Carter Gordon and the Rebels, they're up into fifth spot. They're four wins from their opening seven matches. The pressure's right on the Waratahs. What next for them, including Angus Bell? And European Champions Cup, Will Skelton in action for La Rochelle. So plenty to dig.
And the Sevens. And the Sevens. Hoops.
And the Rugby Sevens.
Yeah, and he had a crack and the girls did not too bad. So, yeah, big weekend.
Semi-final finishes for them. Yeah, so all that coming on the other side of this. Hey, Matt, good to have you here. And you seem like you're well and truly back in Japan, settled, probably washing something down at this late kind of point in the evening. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Christy. Back here, settled. The weather's good. It's actually Sakura season or cherry blossom week, so about a week of the year. All the trees just go like this whitey, pinky colour. It's beautiful, and everyone's in like a really cool mood, and yeah, it's nice. It's a good time to be here. We're going to go do the tourist thing and have a strawberry flavored champagne along the water or whatever they do here. So it's cool times.
That's beautiful. Do the petals fall on the ground or not?
Yeah, a little bit. Because as I say, it's only here for probably, I think, 8 days. And then obviously it's going to go somewhere. So then it's usually on the ground and then it blooms green again. But it's remarkable. It's amazing how many trees are actually that Sakura tree or whatever. Yeah, it's really cool, as I said, and everyone's always in really good spirits. It kind of signifies, the winter's gone and we're kind of going into the good weather. So it's it's really special.
I can't believe, I'm not sure why we're quite how we get here, but the cherry blossoms are now the brave blossoms. I kind of wish that they were still the cherry blossoms, to be fair.
Yeah, it's weird. They seem to attach, I think we spoke about this a while ago, they seem to attach an adjective or whatever to, or like a kind of a strong word to a weird thing. So like brave blossoms, or so for instance, whether Dyna Boars or Panasonic, you got the Wild Knights, and Brave Lupus is Toshiba. So it's kind of just the thing here. I'm not sure why or what, but yeah, they like to attach kind of a word before the symbol or whatever. So it's
bizarre. All right, fascinating. Let's talk a bit of Super Rugby, and only four matches. So for someone covering rugby, probably a little bit better. You get a bit more spare time.
An early mark, yeah.
That being said, the Hong Kong Sevens were on, and that was captivating viewing when Michael Hooper's making his debut. But look, we're going to go to Saturday first of all. Your old franchise, the ACT Brumbies, a good win over the Waratahs. It was close. They played scoreboard pressure. Noel Oliseo kicked his goals once again, faultless. But I just thought it was a pretty clinical performance in the wet, and so much of about that Joe Schmidt and his assistant coach, Laurie Fisher, would be very pleased about.
Yeah, definitely. I thought the Brumbies, they probably didn't have the amount of scoreboard pressure that you might have wanted from the dominance they had in the first half. They were, I think they were, you know, 6 or 12 points or 6 or 9 points up, but you could just tell that they didn't really look in doubt. Like, I don't know about you, it just felt like they were kind of dominating the territory, the contact area, and yeah, they just strangled them in that second half. And as you say, it was kind of, you know, played it a little bit like a test match kind of style, and you know, which is impressive considering they did the same thing the week before against Queensland.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they were 16-6 up at halftime, and it was helped by Harrison Goddard try on the stroke of halftime. He was, I think, impressive in his second start of the year, pretty seamless filling in to Ryan Lonergan, who was ruled out late. But Lolasio, 9th minute, 31st minute, 34th minute to go 3-0 down to 9-3 up. It was just smart rugby, I thought, from the Brumbies.
Yeah, and they had a few goes where they went for the line as well, and it's an interesting one, the Brumbies, because their maul is traditionally so strong. You can kind of create scoreboard pressure by, you know, getting 7 or 5. But one thing that I found interesting was Harrison Goddard's try was a second phase, he's just bounced on the blind side, put it over, dominant carry from the 12 tour. It reminded me of Nick White. Like, it just was like, I've seen Nick White score that try for the Brumbies so many times, and it just goes to show the coaching, you know. And we talk about next man up, you know. So Harrison Goddard started, his second choice traditionally with Lonergan there, but scoring a try that Nick White has scored probably 5-6 times at least. So the coaching's there, the system's there, and it's good to see.
Yeah, totally. And I reckon the confidence that Goddard plays with is because he had a start against Moana Pacifica only a couple of weeks earlier, same venue. So it's just the familiarity, and it's another example of Stephen Larkham's growing maturity, I think, as a coach. So tip of that hat to him. They got their pay in the second half because Billy Pollard probably bombed a couple of tries. There was the rolling maul that he got held up. And then after a great run down the blind side from a short line out, got held. He was pulled up just short, a really good tackle from Charlie Gamble. But the pay came in the second half. Awesome set piece play to send Corey Toole in. I really loved how Noel Olesita just held the ball up nicely. And then shortly after, less than 10 minutes later, Charlie Cale goes over in the right-hand corner. Like, they showed the polish and the poise that the Waratahs probably didn't, because they got a lot of opportunities, the Tars, but they came away very rarely with any points.
Yeah, it's a sign of pressure, really. The end of the game, you've got different players on the field, you've got fatigue, you've got scoreboard pressure, and it just really it showed that, you know, whilst it was only 12-6 or whatever, There was the feel of the game, and that they were really dominating. And I, you know, watching the game, I didn't feel like the Tars really threatened them. Like, sure, you know, Jorgensen had a couple of nice runs. We saw Peach as well not do too bad. And it felt like the Brumbies really controlled it and dominated it. And the result didn't really seem too much in doubt, as opposed to maybe the week before with the Reds, where it was a genuine cliffhanger.
Yeah. And I think we saw impact from the bench, but I just thought the dominance from the entire pack. I thought Julian Heaven went all right for the Tars from a ball running aspect. The injury to Angus Bell didn't help, but it was really only Charlie Gamble that made any kind of influence. Jed Holloway on the defensive line out, but you saw Nick Frost get over the gain line. Tom Hooper carried better than he has. And then Rob Ballantini storms over the top through Harry Johnson Holmes, and then storms over Tane Edmund.
I don't think anyone's stopping them, but yeah, you're right though. Like, they've set the dominance well up front, and this is a team who are missing Alan Alatoa, a Wallaby captain, who are missing the brick shit house old Blake Shoup as well. Like, I think he was playing club rugby, so this is a team that's got depth in really crucial positions, which I know you've been you've spoken to me a lot about, but where they've kind of got the you know, other teams might have got the cart before the horse a little bit, whereas the Brumbies have really solidified their squad up front.
And that comes down to Dan McKellar. I just know that he was massive about having a tight five presence so that they could go toe-for-toe with the Kiwi sides. And Caden Neville, bit of a journeyman before he arrives at the Brumbies and then becomes a Wallaby. Nick Frost was lost at the Tars to go to the Crusaders Academy, and then the Brumbies pick him up, and he was about to leave. McKellar ensured that Rugby Australia managed to negotiate with Panasonic to ensure that he stayed in Australian rugby. Great signing. Darcy Swain, another Queensland kid who comes down and becomes a Wallaby himself. So, and even James Slipper, another guy that had his own off-field troubles and then finds a home at the Brumbies. And then he and Scott Seo jostle for that loose head position for so long. So I just think that what they're doing, you know, three Wallaby hookers at one point in time, that is how you build depth, ensure competition standards at training. I just think that the other franchises in Australia could learn a lot from what the Brumbies are doing.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like traditionally, I know from obviously playing at the Brumbies for a while, that we never felt this pressure to entertain too much. You know, we're very much about winning, and how you win is you know, you have a strong type five, you have a strong set piece. I think what happens maybe with New South Wales and Queensland particularly is that, you know, there is that pressure to entertain because it's such a large market. It's not winning isn't enough, it's how you win. And I think that's probably been evident in the recruitment, you know, often recruiting big names who are the step offload kind of players, and maybe neglecting a bit more of the fellas up front who do the hard work and probably are the ones who get the results. So it's, yeah, it's an interesting balance.
John Connolly, I spoke to him today. He said the exact same point, you know, the pressure, and he was recalling an anecdote from Phil Waugh, obviously the Rugby Australia CEO now, but former TARS captain, Wallabies captain, where he said, you know what, like, we were struggling in Australia. We went overseas to South Africa and we ended up coming away with a couple of wins. And that was, he thought, down to the pressure of playing in Sydney at Sydney Football Stadium. And I know Steve Hoyles was talking about that last week on the Between Two Posts podcast. Like, it does seem like it's the thing, even though it shouldn't necessarily be one. Just staying with Slips before we go into the Rebels, he's a guy that at 34... he's probably 35 now. He's been playing for a long, long time. Debuted in 2010, quickly finds himself up against Dan Cole against England. I think it's Subiaco Oval back in 2010. How important is having guys who are older ensure standards are kept in Super Rugby programs?
Oh, definitely. It's big. The Brumbies are that part of their program's really admirable. The fact that they have some older guys there who genuinely chip other guys and tell them off when they're not doing the right thing. Whereas I think I've noticed in other programs that have been involved, it's not the case, but Slips is great for that. And one of the things about James is you could be like, it wasn't long ago where he, you know, he had his issues up in Queensland and he wasn't playing. And then it was, you know, maybe in other positions, or maybe a guy who didn't have kind of the grit or resilience that James does, you know, he might have been pushed aside and gone overseas and we would have forgot about him. But he's hung around and he's got some tales. He's got, you know, he's got some stories that he likes to tell. He's been there, done that. And I think that's really good. It's really good to have guys like that in Australian rugby and have that experience, because it's not all, you know, positive. It's not all going to be, you know, awesome stories, wonder kid or whatever. You know, sometimes you go through a few hard things, and he's done that, and it's made him stronger. And I dare say he can probably connect with other guys because of that. So I think it's great that he's here, and, you know, I think he's got another year as well. So I'm sure he's going to break all sorts of records in the next couple of years.
Yeah, another Lions series. I don't think he should necessarily be Wallaby's captain, but I think he's the perfect guy, perfect foil to have in a team where that leader can lean upon them and just demand the standards and put an arm and kind of – I think those sorts of guys are integral to the national team going forward as well. Another guy that's quickly entering the conversation for national discussions is Charlie Kale. And, yes – there's a tendency in Australia probably to talk up players maybe too soon. But Charlie Kale is 23. He's not a glittering outside back who's the, you know, the new guy on the chopping block. He's a bloke who's a Dubbo kid. He's come through, wasn't setting the world alight at junior levels, but just seems like he works his backside off and is a really mature person. Like, what have you been impressed by Charlie? And is there Could you see him finding a home in the Wallabies?
Yeah, look, I think at a test level, he's probably more of a six than an eight, which is interesting. You see him and Valentini kind of swap a little bit. But that being said, they use Valentini first phase out in the back line and Kale still jumping, so he kind of plays that traditional six role anyway. So I think for the makeup of a back row, I think at an international level, it is very handy to have. You need a jumping six, or you need an athletic thick six. Sorry, and I think he's perfect for that. You know, he provides something different as well in those wide channels where he can burn guys. I think he scored a chip and chase try early in the season.
Yes, the Rebels.
Yeah, God. So he's I think he's got a bit there. So yeah, look, it's exciting. I think the reason it is cool that we're getting excited about guys whose number is below 10. So that I think that is. That is good for Australian rugby to have, some loose forwards. I think he would provide a nice little balance to, say, a Valentini and a McWright, potentially at seven. So I think that's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. He is, I think, one of the quickest in Australian rugby over 40 metres. And we saw that when he out-sprinted Lockie Anderson for that try. But even on the weekend, you know, he finished that off seamlessly and he still had a bit of work to do there. Corey Toole, once again, another try. And I should actually say, Charlie Cale, you mentioned the line-out. He's had 11 line-out steals. That's the most in Super Rugby to date across the seven games, just ahead of Jed Holloway, who nabbed a few on the weekend, picking off Billy Pollard's throw. And then later on, Connell McInerney lost one too. Switching gears a little bit, the Waratahs, the focus is firmly on them. They're going to actually come up against the Crusaders, who's for the Crusaders.
It's their bunny team, isn't it? Yeah, it's their bunny team.
Like, Tane Edmonds under a bit of pressure, but he's going, hang on a moment, I've beaten the Crusaders two out of three matches. I'm wearing the 10 jersey, thanks. But they're under pressure simply for the fact that for two reasons. They're one from their opening seven games, which is not great. They've lost four on the bounce. But they're under pressure because, and Darren Coleman's been under pressure all year because of an article appearing just before really the preseason kicked off, where Darren Coleman's future was supposed to be settled at the end of the first month. Now, I know that we've discussed this in the past, but over the last week, the Waratahs have had a review. Rugby Australia has been doing a review. Mike Chu from World Rugby previously worked with New Zealand as well as Canada. He's been in there. It can't come at great timing, can it, for a Brumbies match that you have a external, independent person come in and start asking questions around the high-performance setup and perhaps the coaching team specifically around what's going well and maybe and probably more pertinently at the moment, what's not going well?
Yeah, look, I'm going to use the word interesting, but I'd like to use something else. But yeah, it's an interesting time. I think I read in the scope of the review that, you know, there'll potentially be some players who they'll speak to. And from a player's point of view, like, sure, you confidentiality and all that, but players go and they talk to other players, you know, and then when things aren't going well, when it's middle of winter, you know, they start going, oh, you know, who cares, mate? DC's not even going to be here next year or whatever. Like, and it festers and it's just, it's dangerous. It's, you know, it's that negative contagion, which you just don't need in a team. And I question why do we know that there's a review coming out at this time? Like, why is that? Why have they allowed that? And in what other kind of industry do we kind of go, you know, whilst you're doing your job halfway, we're going to, you know, publicly kind of hang out to dry a little bit? It just, for me, it reeks of mismanagement. I think I spoke about it weeks before with, you know, DC feeling that pressure and choosing his team, you know, not being able to look kind of long-term because it looked like he needed to win every game. You know, and you look back now, they're, you know, one from seven, whereas they're a team that really should have at least three wins by now. And they've played well enough to do that, but it's just that final last bit. And yeah, I feel for him. I think he's a good man. He's a good rugby man. It'd be really sad if he ends up being lost to, you know, New South Wales rugby or Australian rugby. And I feel for him because I don't feel like he's been given a good enough shot here.
Angus Bell, his injury, he looked so forlorn and just devastated as he kind of slowly trudged off GIO Stadium, Bruce Stadium on Saturday night. It looks like a reoccurrence of a foot injury. I think from what I'm hearing, and we'll find out more, we're recording this Monday evening, we'll find out more Tuesday with their press conference, but I think he will miss the next 3 months. That's a huge blow. It means that they're still without four of their seven contracted props, and that's just going to stretch anyone's resources, but particularly the Tars, where the front row probably wasn't their strength, and they tried to strengthen that by bringing Tom Ross from the Brumbies up. They brought Hayden Stringer-Thompson down from Europe, a former back rower turned prop. It's brutal for them. And you think about the Crusaders, one of their strengths at the moment is still probably their props. They've got Joe Moody, they've got Fletcher Neal, George Bauer, Owen Franks. It's like, oh dear. And the prospect is that 2 weeks after Jack Barrett, a 19-year-old, debuts, starts in the number one jersey, and it was probably planned to only play half the first half or maybe 30 minutes. Jack Barrett played 20 minutes, got subbed off. It was pretty embarrassing, I imagine, for him, but he's got a bright future ahead. But he goes back last weekend and for Rand Week starts in second grade. So isn't that extraordinary that and Stephen Hoyles is the first grade head coach. It says a lot that around the pathways and the bizarre kind of situation where Jack Barrett, who's contracted in the emerging kind of system through the Tars, is promoted so rapidly yet isn't even playing first grade for Randy.
Yeah, there's obviously a huge disconnect there, isn't it? And it's I think we need to figure out what is the coach's role for New South Wales Rugby. Is it a coach or is he recruiting? Is he because the support system just doesn't seem there. It just does not seem there for Darren Coleman. He's got so many hats at the moment, and I don't think we're actually setting them up. I think we need to, before the season, were we looking at the squad and saying, all right, what's a realistic what's a realistic kind of goal for this team, and then the head coach's job is to achieve that, but instead we just kind of go, they've got to win every game. If they don't win every game, get the new bloke in, I don't think that's realistic. I think it's not understanding where we kind of sit at the moment, particularly in the Super Rugby kind of ecosystem. And then To hear that, he's been playing second grade and it's broken. It's not working at the moment, and there needs Darren Coleman needs a lot of help off the field.
Yeah, well, they lost their general manager Andrew Blades last year, and I know that DC was wearing two hats there, and Jason Gilmore had stepped up with taking on more ownership as a senior coach, but something's not right. And good luck to them this weekend. It's a big one.
Yeah, but that sounds embarrassing, doesn't it? This is a multi-million-dollar business with a squad worth a lot of money and whatever. And we've got a guy who, we lost him last year. Is it any wonder why we're struggling in this? Hang on, he can do it. It just sounds very amateur days. It sounds very rugby kind of club kind of things, everyone kind of chipping in to do their job. But I think we've got to treat it much more professionally. We've got to treat it much more long-term and have that view. And every team now has a general manager, has people doing the off-field stuff and allowing the coach just to coach. I do feel for DC. I know I sound like a broken record here, but I do feel for him. I don't feel like he has that support.
All right, the one franchise that does have an embarrassment of riches at the moment up front is the Rebels, and Pone Farmacili is probably not any closer to getting a crack. And I just feel like there could be an opportunity for him to get some extra game time by even having a short-term trade. But look, the Rebels, 41-20, it didn't look like it was going to plan early on. They were trailing by, I think, about a dozen points or so late in the first half. All sorts of things not quite working, no defensive line speed pressure, struggling at the breakdown, struggling to control the drawer, kicks not finding touch and going dead. And then it turned around, a couple of red cards, costly red cards. But even before then, though, we saw the best of Carter Gordon, perhaps, and we saw maybe the worst of Carter Gordon in the first half.
Yeah, he's an exciting guy, and we talk about him a lot, and for right reason, because, you know, he can flick on a pass and throw a triple cutout, but then he misses touch, or he hits the top of the ball, and I'm not really sure what happened with the kick for goal, you know, like, so he's an exciting guy. I think I'm biased. I'm a friend. Carter's a good mate of mine, but I think, yeah, that was probably a fair indication of where he's at the moment, in terms of, you know, able to have some, you know, really exciting plays, but still the fundamentals of playing fly half. And we compare it to what we require at the test level, because Joe Schmidt will not accept, you know, missing touch or missing a kick from in front. That they're just things that need to, he needs to probably improve a little bit. I think with Reece Hodge now not there, he's got an increased kind of role in the team, and, you know, it might take a little bit of time.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. And it's interesting that all five Australian fly halves at the moment are the goal kickers. And Morgan Terenui compared one of his passes or described one of his passes as being Stephen Larkham-esque, and that was probably that cutout where he cut out three players, and it was lovely. It was sublime. It was delicious ball. But I almost feel like at the moment he'd be better without some of those extra responsibilities of the goal kicking. I know that that'll be a feather in his cap if he continues to work on that. But Larkham wasn't a goal kicker at an international level, was he? And, you know, there was Joe Roth, or there was John Eales, or there was Matt Burke. There's just not enough options, I don't think, across the wider back line, probably in particular for Australian rugby. And maybe Joseph Suaalii, when he comes over, kicks goals for the Roosters often, he'll probably be an option going forward. But it is something worth considering when you're picking your test team, who's going to get you the goals and ensure you win those 50-50 matches off your boot.
Yeah, and it's a huge advantage that Noah has at the moment, and probably worth mentioning as well, Will Harrison. He can kick some goals. He's got that left foot option as well, which might come in handy. You know, I do, when I watch Cart's goal kick, he's using these small tees, which kind of, you know, late in the game when you're fatigued, the sweet spot is not very exposed, and it just makes that job even harder. There's boring bits of it that I look at and I think, it could be a much easier win if you just sat it up and you know, expose the sweet spot a little bit more. And, you know, Cutts he has all the tempo, he has all of that stuff. I think it's just, it might be a time and saddle thing. It might be something that he just needs to go through, and that he'll figure out systems in which he adjusts to it. Cause it is tough I don't know if we call him young anymore, because there's probably a point where, you know, he's not young. Yeah.
Well, he's 23. I suppose Noah Lolesio had his troubles, and he was playing regularly from 2020. And this is his fifth season. It's Carter's probably his second full season of regularly playing at 10. Like, we do have a tendency of, I know that he played a bit in 21 and 22, but we do have a tendency of going, you know, just because they've played international rugby, that they should be closer to the finished product than not. He's got a lot of development. One thing I was really impressed about his game, though, was his clean out work. We don't always see tens go to clean out, but there was a couple of important ones. And one of them that I'll highlight, before Glenn Byhu's second try, Carter's tracking Nick Joost on the inside. He doesn't get the offload, but he's there to clean out really quickly. And then next phase, Taniela Tupou storms through a hole because of the quick phase ball and the quick rack speed that was able to be generated. So that was so important, because then they score a couple of seconds later. And they're some of the things that I like to see as well. So fair play to him. Taniela Tupou, another really dominant performance off the bench, and that's becoming a weapon for the Rebels. Their four victories from their seven matches have come from overturning deficits, generally speaking, in the second half. And that's smart play from Nick Stiles and his coaching team to identify that Taniela is so damaging off the bench with 30 to go.
Yeah, and he's often playing against the second string loosehead, you know, and so he can really impose himself on the scrum. And I think, look, the Rebels will be very encouraged by that, because I think last year they often gave up leads. They would start really well, and then it would kind of fizzle a little bit towards the end. And we had Lucan on early in the year, and he spoke about that and the nature of the win and what that kind of meant for the team. So, look, I personally was very encouraged by the Rebels. Look, sure, there were things that weren't going well at the start, but just that sign of grit and that fight. And as you mentioned, they were already two tries ahead before, you know, Lomani got red carded. So, like, it wasn't a case of the Fijians lost their heads a bit and then the Rebels took over. The Rebels were already asserting their dominance, and I think that's that's good. It's a really good sign for them, and hopefully they can just get a few of those starts now, and then they'll be the full package.
They've got a massive game against the Highlanders this weekend, and it's an opportunity to consolidate themselves in the top six, fifth at the moment. Good signs for the Rebels, good signs for that they're winning with guys injured like Andrew Kellaway. We know that there was backline changes, so that's a really positive thing for them. And Matt Gibbon, another guy that goes under the radar, but he's playing some good rugby at the moment. So well done, and it was awesome to have Nick Styles on the podcast last week. Their future still very much in the balance. I know that there was a meeting last week with Phil Wall where it was a Zoom meeting. They were hoping some questions were going to be answered, but still very much we're not sure. And that's because there's broadcast negotiations happening in the background with New Zealand. There's a partnership there. So lots to play out despite this potential silver bullet with the consortium putting together perhaps 20 to 30 mil. That to me makes them in a legally stronger position. Because creditors will want to be paid. There will be blood on the hands of Rugby Australia. It seems that if they go forward without five sides, so much to play out with this going forward. It'll be fascinating. Hopefully the Rebels can stick tight for as long as possible, because all sorts of uncertainty for them can't be helping, but they're doing their best by putting and registering wins on the board.
Yeah, look, it's we've spoken about it, and rightfully so. I think there's so much going on, but at the end of the day, they're four wins from seven, or they're in the top six or whatnot. They've got a game against the Highlanders, who I know from personal experience they'll back themselves. I think my time at the Rebels, we beat them twice in three goes, and I'm certain that they'll be feeling confident going into that as well. So,
was one of those in Dunedin under the roof?
It was a week before COVID hit. So then COVID hit the week up. So we played one more game back in Melbourne, and then COVID hit. And then it was such a big win for us. But then it just put the back burner because, obviously COVID come in and there was a few more important things. But, I know the Rebels will back themselves against the Highlanders. That would be good going into the bye to be well and truly in the top half.
Well, another thing that affected COVID was the introduction of Moana Pacifica, along with the Fiji and Drua, one of their stars on the other side of this.
And joining the pod now is a legend of our game, over 300 first-class games and 100 tests for the Wallabies, a former teammate of mine, known with the longest arms in world rugby, Sikopi Kepu. Thanks for joining us, Keps. It's good to have you on.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks, Pop. Lovely to join you fellas. Nice to see you. You are still looking nice and young, mate. Still going in there in Japan, I believe. And it's always lovely to have these chats.
Yeah, thanks much. Just a skincare routine. But give everyone an idea. Where are you? You were just saying earlier that you and the family have been in Auckland now for a few years.
Yeah, obviously been involved with the Moana Pacifica now for the last 3 years. Returned back from London during COVID in 2021 and been a part of Counties Manukau, but also Moana in the inaugural season team, setting that all up. And yeah, look, 3 years on, and I'm still here, and I'm very grateful that I'm able to be a part of the team and establishing a culture and trying to build something from the ground up. Never thought I'd be here, to be honest, but COVID happened and circumstances changed, so we found ourselves back here, and it's a little bit slower, but we're enjoying it for what it is at the moment.
Hey, Keps, are you striving to break Brad Thorne's like record of playing when he was 40? Is that next on your radar?
No, mate, taking it day by day, week by week, really. Christian and I are always having good laughs and chats about how the body's feeling and what's squeaking and what needs a little bit of oil and what needs a bit of a physio treatment. But no, mate, it's been obviously had a tough injury a couple of years ago, and I'm just happy to be back playing, to be honest. And it's so challenging, you know. The Super Rugby, I still believe, is probably one of the toughest competitions in terms of speed and the collisions and stuff. So just trying to take it day by day, to be honest, and try and see how far these legs can take me.
Kepps, it's a little bit of a fairy tale in the sense that you obviously, you know, played at Wesley College and spent a lot of time in New Zealand for age grade, and then kind of coming back now and being able, as you said before, establishing a culture at a new club. How does that feel? I know playing with you, you were someone who, you know, always took the Island boys under their wing, and to be able to give back to the game in such a strong way now must be quite rewarding.
Yeah, look, being back here the last 3 years has really, really opened my eyes in terms of the culture and, yeah, a little bit about myself and a little bit more about our Tonga culture and our Samoan and our Pacifica cultures. And I've just been so enriched by the knowledge and everything that I've been able to learn and how it can correlate with our rugby and how beautiful that is, and sort of just tapping into it, really, and learning a bit more about our Pacifica boys and trying to, yeah, get the best out of them so that they do realise, for one, that they have the goods and they don't, you know, a lot of times our boys are, they're very, you know, they relax and they take a back seat and they're happy to be led by others and you know, you get a few that sort of don't make it, and it's about inspiring them and letting them know that that anybody can make it, you know, with a bit of hard work and dedication. So, but it's been nice, man. It's to come back and, I mean, the first step was getting approached by Counties, and that was my first NPC team back in 2005.
Wow.
Yeah. Straight out of school, I played, it was three seasons, two and a half. I got injured the third season, but to be back and be involved in them, with them in 2001, 2021, right through till I've got one more season with them this season, has been quite nice and pretty much, yeah, full circle, if you want to say it that way.
It is nice, and obviously a new club, leaders is such a big, you know, important, and you already mentioned Christian and yourself, but having a guy like Tana must be massive this year to have him and someone who's so revered in the Island community.
Yeah, look, he's someone that's very well respected here in New Zealand, and he's a proud Samoan Pacific man. And look, yeah, it's been awesome to have him, and as well as guys like Julian Salver and other guys from other franchises that have been signed with Moana this year. It's been nice to, yeah, I guess the beauty about rugby is guys from different teams in their, you know, previous years, if you get to know a bit more about them and their environments that they were in previously, and you're constantly learning and trying to learn off guys like Sione Havili that's been at the Crusaders and won seven titles or whatever it was. So you know, it's nice to have guys like that come in and they enrich the environment. Tana and TC and those guys have been awesome.
It must be nice to not be tackling the bus, Julian Sevilla, for once. I'll tell you that. He's a man that Matty Tamua might have got to know a little bit. But Moana's been, you know, in the headlines, not always, like Fiji drew. It's so distinct that they've got a homeland, and it's great to see their home fans. Like, how tough is it from your perspective, Moana, not really having a true identity around where you're playing and a home? Like, I know the home base is in Auckland at the moment, but do the players group, do you want to play in the islands more and go back, or would you prefer to stay on one of the islands, or are you happy in Auckland?
I think for me personally, I think Auckland is probably the best place for it so far, at the moment. you know, with Lakapi Samoa and Tonga Rugby Union. Yeah, I guess eventually it'll have to branch out to there and more games have a sort of a high performance system run in those unions. It's quite hard because it's split, but you know, even being here in Auckland, we've had to move again this year, and so the facilities at Mount Smart went up to scratch. So it is hard. The guys are making do and the guys adapting as best as we can to it. We do have a home in terms of where we're training and stuff, but in terms of playing, you know, you love to see the drawer and their home game advantage. That's where we want to be, and that's where you want to build a fortress with your Tonga and your Samoa home games. You know, that's the ultimate dream. And if you know, we can gain some support and financially over the years, I'm sure that's what the administration have got in the back of their minds and their plans for the future.
Yeah, I think we'd all love to see a lot more games out there. But yeah, it's interesting to see the, you know, the logistics of it. Kept switching tack a little bit. It's, you might know, 10 years since the mighty Waratahs beat the Brumbies in the semi-final and then went on to win the final. Yeah, 10 years, mate, massive. Obviously, we've spoken about your career. There's many highs and that must rank right up there.
Yeah, look, it's definitely up there. Who do I speak to just on the weekend? Like, yeah, firstly, you can't believe it's 10 years. And sometimes you get those little clips pop up and the ones of Big Will Skelton's offload to Bernard and he's scoring in the corner. And
yeah, we don't want to ruin the fairy tale, and we knew how much Sydney needed it. So.
Oh man, I think it is my career highlight. Like, I'd happily take that one. That's got to be gone. You know, like, it just happened, and especially to do it in Sydney. You know, so fickle with their fans and their sports, and we had such a great following. It was just a team of a decade, really. We had special talent. We had orchestrated by obviously Czech, and we had Big Jacques that caught the headlines and had a massive following. But you guys had guys like Hoilsey and, you know, Alofa Alofa that was picked out of club rugby, you know, 6 weeks before that. You know, there's some stories behind those guys. So it was nice to, I'm disappointed. I messaged Drew and the boys that I won't be there this weekend, but I'll be looking out for the chat group and seeing what's going to happen over the weekend.
Yeah, some seriously special talent. I know that there's a bunch of Aussie bass players that are in Japan. They're going to catch up. I know that Bernard Foley and Nick Phibbs and Izzy Folau, they're going to be catching up. So that's really exciting. Czech. Like, what kind of influence do you think he had? Because you had been at the Tars for so long, like for quite a few years before you managed to crack it, and then you were obviously there in 2019 as well, and things weren't necessarily going as well, and they're coming through some issues at the moment now. What do you think it is about Czech that made him the right coach for 2014 and bringing the sum of all those parts, like Jacques from South Africa and Kurt Lee and Nick from Melbourne, and ensuring that Izzy Folau comes from AFL and doesn't go to rugby league, but in fact finds a home at the Waratahs. So was he the perfect figure there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at the time it was something fresh. No one really knew about Czech. He came in, he cracked the whip in 2013. One thing that I love about him is he knows how to get the best out of guys, and he did that really well in 13, 14. And also his eye for putting a team together or scoping guys. Like, he'd go out to the club, he'd have a look at some rugby league games, and he just did that quite in his own, in a funny way. He did that really well and brought us all together. And basically, yeah, that was probably the hardest training I've ever done in my career. Those few years, you know, 2015 World Cups campaign. But I think it was, I learned so much I learned so much in that in those few years. And yeah, I think definitely he turned down the Force, I believe, at the time to come to the Tars. And I think he knew that the Tars had some sort of recipe. We had a good core of young guys coming through, some older guys, some leaders, and a good core of middle-aged guys. So yeah, I just remember cutting the off season short, and he said, you know, we need to work hard. We need to get in by January 3rd. And so we did that, and I guess it all paid off in the end.
Matty, tell us about Sakopi as a player and someone that you would have trained alongside, but also with Cech as the coach in that 2015 campaign. It was a pretty special run that obviously was cut just short, but you guys must look at Australian rugby and the Wallabies and think far out, like there's some things that you'd love to see change or return. And tell us about your experiences together.
Yeah, look, I think what Kets was talking about with Cech, he was such a good motivator. He really knew how to kind of, you know, push the right buttons and the you know, and really grow a team. And sometimes, to be fair to him, it might have been we might have united in hate of how hard training was or whatever it was, but he really knew how to get a team performing, and it was great. And Kets was always such a huge leader in our squad, particularly with the Island boys, but the whole team in general. I know he held a lot of, you know, mana or respect in the team, and it was always special. Someone who I feel very, very privileged to have played with, and, you know, his record speaks for itself. But look, I think and you look at guys like Alan Alatoa, Scott Sio, these Island boys who are now in leadership positions, Will Skelton, and, you know, they were helped there. You know, they were molded in a sense by guys like Kepps and guys like Christian. So I think their fingerprints will forever be on, you know, rugby in Australia.
Kepps, when you think about guys like Alan, who is obviously coming back from an injury, he's around the corner from returning, but Taniela, I know that you guys had a pretty cool relationship too. How do you still interact with the current class of Wallabies, and what do you think of the prop stocks coming through at the moment?
I still keep in contact with those boys. Thank you, Maddie, for the humbling words, mate. I really appreciate that.
I'd never said yeah, look,
and that's what I miss as well, all this banter. Yeah, look, I just recently got a pair of career savers from Alan and Geordie, so that's how much they love their Uncle Kepps. I messaged him. I said, boys, my knees are going and everything else is falling apart. I need a bit of a hand. So those boys gladly sent me a pair. Yeah, look, I think, you know, starting with Alan, you know, he's someone that I just love the way he goes to work. And I just still remember him and Rory, they're best mates, but they just try to take each other's heads off at training, you know, right down to the Bronco. They're in each other's faces, you know, racing each other. And that's something I love about Alan is his competitive edge. And obviously with Taniela, like, he's come back from a really, well, both of them really, like, Achilles injuries, they're big injuries, and I know that firsthand. And I think he's, like you said previously, Matty, he's someone that's really, you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and he needs to be happy where he is and stuff, and he'll start performing. So I think he's starting to get his mojo back, and he's got Luke Khan, he's got Sam Talakai there, he's got you know, those guys that have helped him at the Reds, and I'm sure he's starting to get it back in his groove. He's ripping scrums apart, and it's nice to see. And, you know, obviously, you know, with the Australian props, you know, I'm so excited about this year and watching them in the internationals. You know, they've got Belly. You know, unfortunately, hopefully he's not out for too long. But yeah, they've got Simon, you know, Crono there. That's going to be awesome for those boys, I think. You know, I'm sort of excited for them and the international season coming around, because, you know, that hopefully Alan's back by then, and you've got guys at the Reds that are competing for spots as well. So, I think they're in great hands, and as long as those boys are, so they're in their close to 30s now, I believe, all those boys. So they're right in their prime. Oh, Al, he's 30, I think, this year, eh? Far out.
He's getting on. What are you must be 40, though. it's wicked, isn't it?
hey Kepps, so good to have you and see you smile and have you out running out for Moana Pacifica. I know you've started the last couple of games, and another big one against the Reds this weekend. You're going to get a bit of a tester against Queensland, a side that you would have had a lot of running battles with in the past. So all the best, really good to see you, and thanks for joining the podcast this evening.
Awesome, boys. Thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Kepps. And obviously, we know you're doing bigger and better things in New Zealand, but always remembered for how much you give into the game over here. So, really appreciate it, bro.
No, awesome, man. Thanks, bro.
Hey, awesome to have Sakopi Kepu and a man that just holds so much respect worldwide. So awesome to have him join and great to hear some of his thoughts around Moana Pacifica and also an Aussie rugby. Hey, a couple other things quickly. Kirtley Beale signed over the weekend, announced anyway, with the Western Force. Do you like it or not?
Yeah, I like it a lot. Look, Kirtley as a teammate, he's always been, you know, he's loved by his teammates. You know, he's had plenty ups and downs in his career, and I'm glad, you know, whatever's happened is been put aside, and I'm sure he's happy just to be playing some rugby again. So that's great, and I think he'll add a lot of experience, obviously, and a lot of knowledge to the Western Force. And yeah, hopefully we can just see him out there. From all reports, as you know, Stephen Hawes has been talking about him, says he's looking fit, which is a good start.
Yeah, he certainly is. And I saw him at the golf, actually, at the Australian Open in December, and he looked just so lean, and he loves his golf, and I know that he plays a little bit. You probably would have played a round or two with him, right?
Played a couple of times with him. He's great. He's like me. He loves to curse himself a lot, and then he'll just go off for a little stroll and have a wee chat to himself. And he's good. He's good. He also is a bit dodgy though. Sometimes we swear he'd find some balls that clearly were lost, and we weren't sure if he had a couple in his pocket. But no, he's a good man.
The old Goldfinger, who played with a different ball.
Oh, not sure found if he
has one fan, but look, you wouldn't rule Kirtley Beale's story is a really fascinating one. He's probably a long way back from a Wallabies selection, but he does harbour ambitions, 95 caps. He wants to become the first Indigenous Wallaby to play 100 tests. I think it would be awesome if he manages to achieve that. And he's a guy that played at 3 World Cups, possibly would have played at a fourth had he been eligible last year, but he was clearly stood down. What else, just quickly, about Kirtley that makes him such a likable guy with teammates? Because it's something that I've heard a lot about.
Yeah, he's just genuine. He's really, really genuine. You don't get the sense from Kirtley that he's got an ulterior motive or whatever. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and when he messes up, he messes up, and he goes, "Oh, bloody hell, Kirtley!" You know, like he has a chat to himself or whatever, and he's just you respect guys who are like that, you know. And so when you do have your ups and downs, you kind of have a lot of empathy for him, because you know the kind of the guy he is, or you know you can connect with a guy like that. And he puts a lot of time in for the younger guys as well. He's not too cool or anything. He's not sitting in the back of the bus by himself. So he's a good man. And look, huge, wouldn't it be amazing? I'm sure it would mean a lot to him and the Indigenous community for him to be able to do that. So look, could be a while away, but one can only dream, eh?
Yeah, well, injuries, you never know what will happen. And a guy that can slot goals as well, we remember famously against the Springboks in Bloemfontein. Just lastly, Will Skelton, his side with La Rochelle had a great win, come from behind win over the Stormers. Will Skelton, have you played with a bigger player, and would you like to still see him in the Wallabies conversation going forward?
100%. And no, I haven't played with a big player. I think the only bigger player I've seen is his brother when he was like 14. He kind of like towered over Will, which, I can only imagine what the food bill was at that house. But he's a big leader. Will's always been an influential guy. Even when he was young, I think he made his debut in 2014 against the French. You know, even as a young guy, obviously he's a large guy, but he's a character. He's very friendly. He speaks really well, connects really well with the island boys, but also, you know, the non-island boys, and was kind of a really good conduit in a sense. So, you know, I'm not surprised that he has been picked as a leader. I thought that was smart, because Will is, as I say, he's influential. He people want to be around him, people listen to him, and he's doing amazing things at La Rochelle. And, you know, seeing the quality of the rugby up there, he no doubt will have kind of that, he's not going to lose anything from playing over there.
Well, his side, La Rochelle, is going to come up against Leinster, who beat Dan McKellar's Leicester over the weekend as well. So another great game to look forward to, a rematch of last year's European Championship final. Speaking of leaders as well, Michael Hooper, yes, he made his debut. He's got a fair way to go with the Sevens, but you wouldn't rule it out. He showed his influence around the breakdown, and great to see the men and the women play the semis. They weren't perfect, but they showed some really good signs ahead of the Olympics in Paris.
Yeah, well and truly, and it was really good to watch it, actually. To be fair, I'll be honest, I don't watch a whole lot of sevens, but it was nice to see Hoops running out there. I sent him a message, and he said he sent me one back saying he felt like a headless chook. So he didn't look it, so he did well. And it would have been interesting, actually, because for a guy who's, you know, one of our most accomplished, well, definitely our most accomplished captain, but our most accomplished players, I would have been really interested to see how his nerves were. Like, you know, like this, what we might think is just a little, you know, kick around or whatever, but like, he, you know, he hadn't played first.
Well, he said he was nervous, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, and you would, like, you would be, and particularly because there is a lot of unknown there and maybe expectations. So, yeah, it's kind of, I'm sure that kind of feeling for him makes him feel, you know, young and alive again. It probably gets him up and motivates him a little bit. So, yeah, it was good.
The next stage of the World Series Sevens, start of May, that'll be something to look forward to in Singapore. Michael Hooper continuing to try to press for a spot in the Paris Olympics. Hey, Matt, always good to talk. Thanks for coming on. As always, great to have Sakoka Kepik join earlier, and look forward to next week's pod with you.
Awesome, mate. Thanks for having me. Cheers.